I couldn't see it being behind her, but Cademan's reaction was eloquent. I beg your pardon? Your sister. You did say she was leaving us?
Yes.
We both are. I'll be taking her with me. Very well. I should like to wish her a safe journey. Is she available?
I will go and check.
Someone touched my shoulder, and I looked around to find Mircea standing behind me. He pulled me over beside some yellow and white striped chairs, but we didn't sit down. He put a hand on my cheek and looked into my eyes like he was trying to see something behind them. Or someone.
Are you all right?
She's not here, I said irritably.
That's not what I asked.
I'm fine. What's going on?
It's complicated.
It usually was around here. I decided to cut to the chase. Am I free to go, or are they planning to pull out some fingernails first? A small frown appeared on the otherwise unlined forehead.
You helped the consul, possibly saved her life. If you hadn't realized that Ting was riding her and disrupted its concentration.
I also got a blade in her. How long has it been since that happened? Mircea's lips quirked.
Some time, I believe, but it was preferable to the alternative.
So I'm free to go?
In a moment.
Why did I know he was going to say that?
First, I wish to hear about Torina. You said she was talking to you. Has she done that before?
Not directly.
Meaning?
It was sharp. Meaning, usually she just sends me these weird dreams.
What kind of dreams?
I rubbed my eyes and suppressed a yawn. I kept getting sleep, but not enough, possibly because I was constantly being woken up in the middle of it. More like memories. Your memories, mostly. She was hitching a ride on you a lot while growing up, did you know? He grimaced.
Eventually. I would have preferred to realize it before I spent quite so many nights in dissolute company.
And in dissolute beds? He raised an eyebrow.
More like playing cards in rough taverns. Sometimes I wonder what you think of me.
So did I. But he'd been doing the good father routine and the stuff Dorina had showed me, fighting to keep her, us, safe, and putting himself in danger to do it. I was about to ask how he'd got off that damned death boat, and if it was Dorina whose voice he'd heard, but I didn't get the chance.
What has she shown you?
It was idle. Too much so. Mircea and I didn't make a lot of small talk. Why? What are you afraid of?
Nothing. But if you want to know about those days, you have only to ask. I could tell you.
But it would be from your perspective, wouldn't it? He didn't say anything, and his face, of course, gave nothing away. But somehow I knew I was right. That's it, isn't it? You're afraid of me seeing things through her eyes. Is that why you told her not to talk to me?
No.
Then why? Because it's caused some damned problems, Mircea.
And could cause more, if you allow it to continue.
His expression hadn't changed, but his voice was clipped, the way it got when he was angry, or afraid. He didn't process fear any better than I did. He just hid it better. We both had a tendency to lash out, to savage whatever was threatening us, even if that was each other. It had led to some truly spectacular fights in the past.
I warned her to be careful, he told me. Now I am warning you. Give yourself time.
Assuming I have any. I'd spoken without thinking, because I was still half asleep. but of course he picked up on it, and pulled me even farther away from the others. I didn't know why. With the acoustics in here, and with most people's hearing, we could be eavesdropped on from anywhere in the room. Or maybe not.
Explain,
he told me, but I was preoccupied, watching Burbles and the other guys suddenly start drifting this way. What are they doing?
Putting up a screen.
What?
Creating mental white noise.
Mircha's voice was impatient.
No one will hear us.
No one but them.
Their family.
Maybe yours, I thought, watching Burbles flutter his fingers over a tray of hors d'oeuvres that was being passed around.
Are these fey?
He asked delightedly. Yes. The blonde fey holding the tray bent down a little to provide better access, since he was tall enough to give Olfin a run for his money. And I suddenly understood why the consul had NBA-sized guards. She was damned if anyone was going to tower over her people in her own house.
Dory.
That was Mircha. I don't know if I can explain, I told him. I don't know what Dorina wants, since I haven't been able to talk to her, but I've been getting mixed messages.
Such as?
On the one hand, she's sending me dreams about that mission you were on back in Venice, to find the people murdering vampires for their bones. You remember?
Vividly.
Yeah, I guessed so. Anyway, I haven't got the whole story, but I saw enough to realize that the same thing is happening now, only with fey bones instead of vampire.
Yes, Kit told me what you said. So that's how you knew what was in those weapons.
Partly. There were other clues, but I wouldn't have made that connection without Dorina, and I think she sent it to me on purpose. Like she picked up something when we were at the fights a few days ago and wanted me to know.
And the other?
What?
The other hand. I assume there's also been a downside?
Yeah, well, I thought about the last few days. That's one way of putting it.
So delicious, Burbles was saying. So, so good. What was that again?
The fey waiter said a word I couldn't pronounce.
And what is that?
I do not know the equivalent in English. Stuffed field mouse?
Burbles turned slightly green.
How exactly would you put it?
Mircha demanded. I hesitated. I don't claim any diplomatic abilities myself, but even I have limits. And telling somebody, there's a chance your daughter might hate you and also me, and has every reason to do so, is a bit much. But as it turns out, I didn't have to.
I know what Dorina thinks of me,
Mircha said grimly.
I locked her away. It was meant to be temporary, until you stopped growing and caught up.
But it wasn't, I pointed out. Why? The dark eyes glanced around the room, distracted, or disingenuous.
I've told you. I was afraid I couldn't raise the wall again once it fell. If you weren't compatible and couldn't live as one, I would lose you both.
As it was, you just lost her.
I didn't lose her.
The dark eyes snapped back to me.
The situation wasn't ideal, but as you've seen, she wasn't trapped. Physically, yes, unless you were asleep or let your emotions get the better of you. But mentally, she could go anywhere. Anywhere she could find an avatar, that is.
And you decided that was enough for her. It wasn't harsh or even inflected. I didn't have the control over my voice that the vamps did, and right then I was too tired to try. But Mircha flinched anyway. That must have really struck a nerve.
I didn't think it was enough, but it was better than nothing, which is what I would have had otherwise.
What you would have had? I felt my forehead wrinkle. What about what she had? She could go flitting about, riding different people, but she wasn't in control of any of them. She can't just take over like that. Maybe in an emergency, but not reliably, and not for long. It hit me suddenly that Dorina had been left just watching things. She could get out, see the world, watch other people's families, lovers, children, but could never have any of her own. And wasn't that almost worse than the reverse? To be left watching others live while you have no way to influence anything, decide anything, plan anything? Even with me. I chose where we went. Dorina just went along for the ride. And now, after 500 years, what did she want? Had anyone ever asked her? Had she ever even asked herself? Maybe part of the reason she hadn't talked to me was that she didn't know what she wanted yet. I could relate. Until I met Claire and finally found some sort of stability, I hadn't done a lot of planning either. What was the point when you don't see a future anyway? But now, after all this time, Dorina could have one. Damn. It was a miracle she hadn't banished me already.
Banished? Shit.
Stay out of my head.
You're projecting.
Don't give me that. I couldn't project shit right now. My head feels like a lead balloon.
Perhaps if you would cease beating it into hard things, it would not.
Mircha turned me around and ran practiced fingers over my scalp. The bump was in the back this time, where I'd almost cracked my skull against the hard marble of the console's wall, thanks to her sending me and everybody else in the area flying out of the way of her little storm. I couldn't complain too much, since I'd be a skeleton right now otherwise, but damn, it hurt. Until Mircha's soothing fingers stole the pain away, better than a shot of morphine. I drowsily watched Burbles, who was back at it again, I guess in the hopes of bettering interspecies relations.
What a lovely little molded salad, with all the tiny flowers in. Why, it's almost too pretty to eat.
The server plucked it out of his hand halfway to his mouth. Sir, please do not consume the tray ornaments. There's another way,
Mircha murmured. Another way for what?
Out of this dilemma we find ourselves in.
I turned around to look at him because there was something in his voice.
What dilemma?
He frowned. No, it was more like a full-blown scowl, which I guess he could risk, being currently hidden from the room. Doubly so, since the consul's guards had also drifted over here, leaving us behind two walls of vamps and cut off from everything. But it was still strange. Like the small shiver that suddenly went up my spine.
You and Dorina.
It was my turn to frown.
What about us?
Mircha suddenly gripped my arm.
Do you think to hide it from me? I know exactly how powerful she is, what she can do. I know what she can do to you.
I shifted uncomfortably in my stiff, backless slippers. I wasn't ready to talk about this right now. I wasn't ready to talk here at all, where the walls had ears, and Marlowe, damn him, was probably listening in no matter what Mircha said. Not that I thought I'd be any more prepared back home.
We will discuss it now, Mircha said grimly. If she already has this much access to your mind, there's no choice. We have to act, and act soon.
Act how? What are you—
These new weapons. They aren't normal magic, the type that mages produce. Our kind can't manipulate that, can't use it. We can buy it, at a high cost, from others. But that's all. But this— The energy in those weapons is taken from the life force of the creatures providing it.
What? Then the soul thing is true?
Soul thing?
Something some of the Fae believe. That their souls are, well, that somehow they end up in their bones. Ask Cademan.
I will.
Mircha looked at the Fey King, still arguing with Louis César. The expression did not bode well for him.
All we know for certain is that the weapons are utilizing life magic, the same kind we tap into when we feed. And that kind of magic we can utilize. We do so every day.
So?
So that cash that the Major stole back tonight, if we can find it again.
He licked his lips. It was such an uncharacteristic gesture that I stared. He didn't notice.
There should be enough.
Enough for what? Mircha, what are you talking about? His eyes found mine again.
The problem with separating the two of you was always the amount of power it required. Especially now, with the age gap between Dorina and me insignificant. On my own, I cannot hope to contain her. But with the power in those weapons...
I gripped his arm, the shiver a full-on shudder now. Mircha, what are you saying? Dark brown eyes bored into mine, fierce and compelling.
I'm saying that I might be able to rebuild the wall.
Chapter 49. I stared up at him. This close, he and Radu could almost have been twins instead of brothers. The arched brows, the patrician nose, just a little too straight for aquiline. The high cheekbones and the sculpted lips were all the same. But no one would ever have any trouble telling them apart. Radu had a slightly more delicate cast to the features, which had earned him the sobriquet The Handsome, once upon a time. Mircha was plenty handsome himself, but it wasn't the same type. There was a sweetness to Radu, a gentleness that had somehow survived everything that had happened to him. His thick lashes and bright eyes had always reminded me of a stag. Beautiful, regal, occasionally silly, one of nature's great works of art. But lovely as it was, and as powerful as it could be at times, a stag was still prey. And Mircha could never be that. He was the wolf in the darkness, the eagle flying overhead, the predator you never saw coming. The eyes could melt with genuine feeling, or brighten with laughter, or charm, or seduce, or any of the other thousand tricks in his repertoire. But if you looked close enough, you could see them, even then. The watchful eyes of the predator, staring back at you. I recognized them because I had them too. I sometimes wondered if that's why we clashed so often. We were too alike. Too stubborn, too suspicious, too... something. We'd never had an easy relationship. I doubted we ever would. But I wanted that relationship, no matter how much I had denied it. Wanted it fiercely. And so did Dorina. She might resent him, even hate him, but she loved him too. I remembered that pang of longing she'd felt in the hall while he searched for her. Remembered and experienced it all over again, because it echoed the same emotion in me. She loved him however much she didn't want to, loved him despite knowing it wasn't returned, loved him even after he locked her away. And now he was planning to do it all over again? How could he do that? How could he even think that?
Because I want you to live.
Hard hands gripped me. I struggled, but was too weak to break his hold, to do anything but stare up at him in disbelief and pain. Hers, mine, ours. I wasn't sure anymore. How could he do this?
Listen to me.
I've listened to you for 500 years, and what has it got me?
Life.
I laughed, and it was cruel. I heard it in my voice, but couldn't stop it, didn't care. Yeah, and I've enjoyed it so.
More than you would have if I'd done nothing.
I'd finally managed to pull away and had started to walk off to clear my head, but at that I rounded on him. How do you know that? How do you know anything? You don't know much about me and less about her.
Maybe she could have compensated in time. Maybe we'd have reached some kind of balance. Or maybe not. Maybe we'd have been torn apart like all those other Domfiers and died screaming, but you don't know. Because you had to interfere, to handle everything just like you always do. How has that worked out, Mircha?
Better than the alternative.
I spread my hands. How? I've spent centuries scrabbling, half mad, on the edges of a society that hates me, looking for a foothold I only found because of her. Meanwhile, she's been caged like some kind of animal, only able to emerge when there's something to kill, abandoned, alone, and now you're planning to do it all over again. A hand like steel found my arm.
I am planning to save your life. Something you will not have if she banishes you. And you've thought about it. Don't deny it. That word came from your head, not mine. You've thought.
Maybe I have. I struggled with his hold and went nowhere. It doesn't mean she'll do it.
And it doesn't mean she won't. Vampires have a constant war between our two natures, pulled by the beast on one hand, and our humanity on the other. Forced to reconcile the two because we don't have a choice. You do. And now so does she.
I'm not listening to this.
Yes, you are. For once you are going to listen.
For once? For once? I stared at him.
You never listen.
You never talk.
Well, I'm talking now.
It was grim.
The vampires have no choice but to blend our two natures, to come to equilibrium or to go mad. And some do, unable to reconcile the monstrous part of themselves that every human has, but that every human does not have to feed. We cannot hide from what we are. They have to prey on others to survive. But we cannot give in to it utterly. Or we risk becoming the monsters we are so often taught to be. It is a constant balancing act, and there are times, oh yes, there are times, when we would love to banish one part or the other. What if we could?
You wouldn't. Go back to being human? I laughed because that comment deserved it. No vampire would do that.
You might be surprised. But that isn't the offer on the table, is it? Not you becoming human, but Dorina becoming vampire. Fully, completely, with no human side to hold her back, to rein her in. You've thought about it. Don't you think she has too?
Damn it, Mircha. You can't just... I stopped the explosive comment I'd been about to make, tried to compose myself. Arguing with him made me see red faster than anything else on Earth, and then nothing productive happened. She could do it, I admitted, after a moment. I know she could. I met his eyes. But she hasn't, and she's had plenty of time.
Mircha didn't even blink. She's had a few weeks. To our kind, that is nothing. To her, it is nothing. Her viewpoint today, if she even knows it yet, may not be the same tomorrow, or next week, or next month, or next year. The fact is, she can banish you at any time, force you out and take over, and you have no defense against it, save one.
You mean by doing the same thing to her?
Not the same thing. She will still be alive.
I looked at him. And wished I had his way with words. Wished I had a way to make him see. That's not living. It never had been. But I didn't have the words, and maybe there weren't any, because Mircha was as stubborn as I was. He'd found a solution once, at great cost to himself, when everybody had told him there wasn't one. It hadn't been perfect, but from his perspective, it had kept both versions of his daughter alive. Why change it now? But for me, it wasn't that easy. I hadn't known what was happening before, hadn't even known Dorina existed.
much less the price she'd paid for my continued survival. And now that I did, how could I send her back to that? What right did I have to send her anywhere?
You have the right of any creature to survive.
Get out of my head!
I turned away, furious and frustrated and afraid, more than I wanted to admit, and angry at myself for feeling that way. Because she'd never given me a cause, had she? Not once. And she'd helped me all those times she'd fought for me. Maybe I hadn't needed it, but maybe I had. Maybe there'd been things she'd picked up on that I hadn't seen, dangers I hadn't noticed. Like tonight. I'd been sleeping, dead to the world. The faint static of that creature's mind hadn't even registered. I would have slept right through everything and awakened to the death of a queen and a world in chaos. But Dorina had heard. And while I might have been the one to throw that knife, she had gotten me there. Or maybe she'd just done it out of self-preservation, since our losing the war would hurt her too. Like maybe all those times she'd helped me in the past were because she thought me weak and incapable and hadn't been willing to risk it. I just didn't know. And neither did Mircea. I turned back around. I want to talk to her.
Dory!
For a moment, Mircea looked like he was about to lose his cool. The eyes flashed amber bright, the nostrils flared, the hawk-like aspect of his features became a little more pronounced, because I have the same effect on him that he does on me. But he reined it in.
That would be unwise. He told me tightly. If she knows what we're planning, she could and likely would evade it.
We aren't planning anything.
But you should be. Now, while she's asleep. When she wakes up, we won't be able to talk. When she wakes up...
I didn't hear the rest of the sentence. It was drowned out by a burst of noise, shockingly loud, only it wasn't. Just the usual soft music, idle conversation, and click-clink of glasses, which I hadn't realized had been blocked out until it suddenly broke over us again. I stared around, like Mircea himself was doing. Something had cut through the sound barrier his masters had created, but I didn't know what. And I couldn't see what was happening in the room because there were still two rows of vamps in the way. Until suddenly... there weren't. They parted, straight down the middle, leaving a long, cleared path lined with vamps on either side. And at the end was a woman. No, make that a fay. Beautiful and golden-haired, her shining locks cascading to the floor and explaining the consul's current hairstyle. But there was no goth vibe here, no reds and golds and vague creepiness. There were only big blue eyes, and a simple blue gown, and a peach and pink complexion, like something out of a Victorian painting of the perfect woman. Or girl, because she looked about 16. She wasn't. Ephridus was almost as old as her brother Cademan, and he was ancient by human standards. But looking at her, it was almost impossible to believe. The air of innocence was palpable. Which was why it was so strange to feel the tide of rage suddenly pouring through me. I had time to say, uh-oh. Not that I could hear it over the roaring in my ears. I had time to look at Mircea, who was staring back with alarm on his face. I had time to feel the strangest sensation, like I was about to vomit up the world. And then Dorina tore out of me, as I'd seen her do in Mircea's presence once, barely a ripple on the air, almost invisible unless you knew what to look for. But I did. And even if I hadn't, it wouldn't have mattered. I'd have caught on when Ephridus started screaming. Everything after that happened really fast. I saw something emerge from the Fae Queen, another ripple in space. But not one rising calmly or charging out determinedly, but ripped out of her by Dorina, right before they went writhing into the air and what felt like a couple extra atmospheres descended on the room. Mirrors shattered, vases toppled, Fae and vampire alike hit the floor. Except for Mircea, who grabbed me right before something smashed into us like a freight train. It sent me flying back against the wall for the second time that night, something I wasn't sure my body could take. But Mircha had gotten behind me and absorbed the blow, and then held me as I screamed and fought, feeling like my insides were being ripped out because Dorina was back, and she'd brought company. Whatever she had planned, it had gone horribly wrong, because the creature was far more powerful than her, than both of us. I felt Mircha invade my mind, trying to help, but it easily flung him out as well. But it obviously didn't know my father, because the next moment he was back and he'd brought company, too. A lot of it. I didn't know all of Mircha's masters, but suddenly I could see them, and not just the ones gathered around us. A brunette sat on a sofa a few floors down, a book falling from his suddenly motionless fingers. Half a dozen beat-up guards, drinking around a table in Washington State, looked up all at once, as much in sync as if they'd been practicing for weeks. A few dozen more dropped what they were doing in Las Vegas, heads turning unerringly toward New York. But it wasn't enough. This thing, this Fae Queen's power, was like nothing I had ever encountered. Shocking, cutting, cruel, and pervasive. It felt like every cell was being attacked at once. I tasted blood in my mouth, saw it spurt from my lips, felt my heartbeat start to slow. And then my field of vision abruptly widened, or pulled back might be more accurate, because suddenly I could see beyond the confines of the country, Earth like a blue ball spread out beneath me, one with golden sparks lighting up everywhere. Mircha's family spread around the globe, a lightning storm of power all coming online at once at their master's call. And while the thing inside Efreetus was strong, so were we. Everywhere she looked now were faces staring at her. Every move she made was countered, not by the power of one or two, but by dozens, hundreds, thousands. I'd had no idea Mircha's family was so large, no idea at all. And then the globe caught fire as a few million more sparks flared in the darkness. "The Senate," someone said, but I didn't know who. I was watching a globe full of light come screaming at us, a ball of fire roaring with the combined fury of all the Senate's masters and their families all at once. I didn't feel it when the blow landed because it didn't land on me, but I felt the creature get torn out of me, felt it go flying back to its home, saw the Fae Queen get lifted off her feet by the force of it and slammed back against the wall, hard enough to go crashing through it. And then they were gone. All those minds, all that power, leaving me panting in Mircha's arms as Cademan dove for his sister, as the consul stepped daintily forward, as Luis Cesar ran for me, and as Marlowe's voice boomed out from somewhere across the room. "I believe we have our second senatorial witness, Majesty."
"You know, I do believe you're right," the consul said, peering through the hole in the wall at her currently unconscious guest. She looked at her guards, streaming at her from all over the room, and bared some fang. "Take her."
Chapter 50 Mircha, Venice, 1458. Mircha crawled desperately through a punishing storm. It would have been hard enough with the streets of the Rialto running like rivers, splashing mud and muck in his face to match the torrent bucketing down from the skies, and with two broken legs dragging behind him, torturing him with every move, and with a hysterical woman pulling on him when he was already going as fast as he could. But then a voice sounded an alarm. He jerked his head up, panic spreading through him. But it hadn't come from a party of foot soldiers running at him with bare blades, as he'd been expecting. This voice was as pure and clear as a bell, and echoing as loudly inside his head, along with that of every other vampire in Venice, because that's the kind of power the Praetor possessed. He stared around in shock as he listened to her low, husky tones order the entire city to find and kill him. "Come on, come on!" The red-haired woman was tugging at him, half out of her mind with fear, even without hearing the latest disaster. "We have to go."
"We have to hide,"
Mircha snarled back, because the pain was excruciating, and his head was spinning, and something very like horror was spilling through his veins.
The Praetor just called for my death.
Well, of course she did.
The woman looked at him like he was mad.
What did you expect?
Something else.
He crawled into the shadow of the great bridge, not having strength enough to pull shade around him just now, and hoped it was enough. The angry skies had lowered a black veil over Venice, blocking out the moon, the stars, everything except the lightning storm, like a bunch of devilish sprites dancing through the clouds above them. Mircha watched it through a haze of shock and pain. Or he tried to.
What's happening? Why are you stopping? What?
Mircha grabbed the red-haired woman's skirts and jerked her down. A moment later, they huddled together in silence, watching a group of five vampires come running out of the square. But instead of looking around, searching for them, they were looking at the Grand Canal, which currently had as many white peaks as the ocean. One of the biggest slammed into the quay a moment later, drenching the vampires and sending them staggering back. And then a voice called out, a normal one, this time, from a side street.
Over here! I think I saw them!
The vampires didn't pause to argue. They ran in the direction of the voice, not least because there were porticos and colonnades that way to provide shelter from the storm. And a moment later, Mircha felt Dorina flit back to him.
That was you?
Yes. I planted an idea in one of the guards, but it won't fool them for long.
I'll heal in a moment,
Mircha said, hoping it was true. But the vampires who mended hurt so quickly were far older than he, and had large families from which to draw strength. He had a hysterical woman, the disembodied consciousness of his daughter, and half a body. He was going to die, wasn't he? And then he felt like an ass, because if it hadn't been for his little group, he'd be dead already. Dorina had been with him on that awful ship, something he would have given a great deal to spare her. But he had reason to be grateful for her presence. She'd been the one to flit down to the hold, to wake the red-haired woman, and to persuade her to reactivate the portal, and then to help Mircha break through that strange paralysis long enough to crawl a few yards, near to where a group of unconscious vampires lay slumped by the mainmast. He hadn't been much better off himself, dizzy and prone to body parts suddenly going unresponsive, and he'd been confused as to what exactly he was doing here, instead of finding a way to slip into the water without anybody noticing. But that wasn't likely, and he assumed Dorina had a reason. And then he had felt it, the dim thrum, thrum, thrum of the portal's energy, radiating upward from the ceiling of the room below. For a moment, his eyes had widened and his heart had leapt, because portals didn't have sides, did they? They weren't like doorways. They could be entered from any angle and still dump you out wherever they went. It wasn't guesswork. He'd used one before. He knew how they worked. So if he could just break through these boards. But he couldn't. They were nothing special, just normal boards, sturdy yet weathered by sun and sea. Normally, smashing them to bits would have been the work of a moment. But today, nothing was normal. And if Mircha's limbs were clumsy, it was nothing compared to his hands. They flopped against the deck like two beached fish, all but useless. He couldn't get any strength behind them, and even if he did manage to break through the damned planks, how is he supposed to remove them in his current state? How is he supposed to pry up the deck of the ship without bringing every sailor on board down on his head? It was impossible. He lay there, furious and terrified, feeling the portal's power quite literally just below him, but having no way to access it.
Dorina,
he thought, his gut twisting. He had to find a way to persuade her to leave before she saw what she wasn't going to see. He didn't want her to remember him like that. He didn't want... And then something hit his face. A single drop of water ran down his cheek, distracting his thoughts. And then another, and another. The soft patter steadily growing harder. It cut through the greasy feel of that terrible smoke, still billowing this way even as the winds picked up and the rain came down and the ship began to rock slightly side to side. And as Mircha looked skyward, at a miracle. He'd felt like laughing even in that awful place, because God, and yes, there was a God, he knew that because the divine delighted in tormenting him, had decided he'd suffered enough, and sent him salvation in the form of one of Venice's famous November storms, a big one. The skies hadn't cracked open so much as torn asunder, suddenly deluging the small ship with a solid sheet of rain, along with wind and lightning and cresting waves that sent the vessel sliding around on its anchor, and mages yelling and rushing to get their cargo secured so that it didn't tip into the sea. Mircha barely noticed. He had started scrabbling at the deck, desperate to break through, and failing because his hands still didn't work. But his elbows did. Enough, at least, for him to punch through the boards with brute force and then to tear at them with teeth and elbows and wrists, heedless of the sound now, most of which was covered by thunder in any case. Speed was all that mattered. Yet he still hadn't been fast enough. Somebody saw him. He didn't know who, but it didn't matter. Not with hands suddenly grabbing him, dragging him back. But the portal had seized him too, catching the fist he'd accidentally dangled too low and pulling, pulling, pulling. Hence the broken legs, or shattered, more like, that had resulted from the tug of war between a powerful magical object and half a dozen men. The portal won in the end, but it was safe to say that Mircha still lost. Maybe God wasn't finished toying with him after all. But then, as he was dumped onto the flooded streets of the Rialto, still desperately fighting to get away, he received his second miracle. The portal shut down. Not correctly or properly, at least he assumed not, since it cut several mages and a vampire in half in the process, when the shortcut through space they'd been using suddenly disappeared. The two mages were human. They had not continued to move for long. But the vampire was different, and he wasn't one of the poor sods destined for the rendering pots, but one of those putting them there. Worse, he was a master. And even half a master, Mircha had discovered, was far more powerful than he. The vamp might be trailing half his intestines behind him, but he still had two good arms, and an excess of shattered boards that had followed them through the portal. Quicker than Mircha could parry, almost quicker than he could see, the master grabbed one of them, snapped off the end to give it an edge, and looked down in alarm at the similar piece of wood sticking out of his own chest, the bloody tip glistening in the latest lightning blast. Mircha had a second to see the red-haired woman standing over the body, her eyes huge, her hands still gripping the other end of the piece of wood. And then the master was hacking at him again and again and again, trying to finish the job. And Mircha was grabbing up a shard of his own, his fingers suddenly quicker, steadier, with the feel of an invisible hand covering his own. "Dorina," he thought. And she was savage, slashing across the creature's throat, releasing a torrent of black blood, sticky as tar. It flooded over him, them, as he panted in shock and pain, and struggled to get away with the creature's body pinning his legs. But he was too clumsy, and it was too heavy, leaving him nowhere to go as the master slowly raised his head, the dark slash in his throat mirroring the grinning rictus on his face, and grabbed for his makeshift stake again, because the horror hadn't bled out yet. "Die, die, die!" Mircha was yelling and stabbing and scrabbling back, agony shooting up his spine as the true state of his legs became apparent, and as the master got the makeshift stake in him more than once, and as Mircha kept twisting and turning and scuffling and slashing to make sure it didn't hit his heart, and then watched as the master's head went bouncing across the cobbles and fell into the canal, when a lucky strike finally finished the job. He lay there, watching it bob among the waves for a moment, his mind blank with shock, until somebody slapped him. The red-haired woman, Mircha realized, staring up at her. "Move!" she screamed. He moved, Not running or even walking, both of which were out of the question now, but crawling, if dragging himself by the arms counted. Because passing out or cursing or any of the other things one usually did in these cases wouldn't get him anything but dead. And he didn't want to be dead. But several hard minutes later, he could still see the space where the portal had been, sandwiched between the two stalls that had fallen over in the gale. And right after that, the Praetor's voice had shaken whatever tiny hope he'd had left, leading him to his current state, sprawled against the side of the bridge, wondering if the booming sounds from above were God's hysterical laughter. Then the woman slapped him again.
"I said, where are the rest?" she screeched.
Mircha blinked up at her, mud and water and gore dripping off his face.
"The rest of what?"
"Your companions. When are they coming for us?"
Mircha started wondering if fear had driven her mad.
"Would I be in this condition if I had companions?"
She stared at him, and then she shook him.
"What are you talking about? Where is the circle? Where is Abramelin?"
"You know Abramelin?"
She stared at him some more, although he wasn't sure how well human eyes could see in this light. But she must have seen something because she managed to slap him again.
"You weren't sent to get me out?"
"Cease attacking me, woman!"
Mircha snapped and pushed her. From his perspective, he'd barely touched her. But he sometimes forgot vampire strength. Or perhaps she slipped on the torrent raging across the cobblestones, he didn't know. He knew only that she hit the side of the bridge, bounced off, and fell down the embankment.
"Katso!"
He scrambled after her, afraid she would drown. And she might have. The canal was roiling like the ocean, as if the whole city had somehow floated far out to sea. But she wasn't in it.
"Abramelin! Hai un figlio di puttana! Un porco demonia! Un miserabili pezzi de merda!"
Mircha blinked. He didn't know if Abramelin was the son of a whore, but he was absolutely spawn of the devil and a miserable piece of shit.
"He sent you in and then abandoned you," he guessed, as she floundered around in a boat full of fish.
"He said he just wanted information. He said I wouldn't get hurt."
"Sounds familiar."
She wiped her face, which didn't help because the rain was still pelting down.
"You too?"
Mircha nodded, before remembering that she couldn't see it.
"Yes. And now we're both in desperate danger. But if you're with Abramelin, you must be a witch. You can get us out of this."
Sprawled among the fish, she looked up at him for a startled moment, her face blank, and then began laughing, hysterically. Mircha went back to worrying for her sanity.
"I'm what's known as a scrim," she finally managed to gasp, as if that made things any clearer.
"What?
You know, like the curtains?"
Mircha scowled.
"I'm not a mage. I don't know what that means."
"It refers to my kind being like curtains that block out the sun, leaving a room dark inside. Magicless."
"Then you're not a witch."
"I'm a witch as much as any of them,"
she snarled, probably because she had just tried to get out of the boat, slipped on fish, and landed on her backside.
"But I don't make good enough magic for anyone to detect it. My kind make good spies."
"So you're a spy?"
Mircha said, because, frankly, she didn't look like one.
"I'm an idiot," she spat. "I came to Venice because I have one talent, one I hope to turn into a fortune and spite them all, everyone who always told me how useless I was. But instead, I listened to Abramelin and his stupid stories about the future of the magical community, the same one that always despised me. And now look."
Mircha cut her off.
"What talent?"
"Glamoury."
She was thrashing about in fish guts, in what to her was probably total darkness, but that didn't seem to have dampened her spirits any.
"Go to Venice," they said. "The courtesans there live like queens," they said.
She slipped again and ended up draped across the side of the craft, cursing.
"If this is a queen, I'd rather be a commoner."
Glamoury, Mircha repeated, hope dawning. Then you can disguise us.
I could disguise myself, she corrected. I don't have enough magic for two. And it doesn't matter anyway when I can't disguise my scent. Or don't you think I'd have walked away before this?
Mircha felt like battering his head against the boat, but he was hurt enough.
Abra Melon, the bastard, was supposed to send someone to get me, the woman continued, ripping her skirts to get them free of a nail. But the damned Praetor changed locations, and I couldn't get to the rendezvous for a week or so. She didn't want anyone getting wise to her little scheme.
To kill the council and take over, Mircha said, as things finally made sense.
The woman nodded. The weapons she was making from all those bones would give her the edge she needed when they dueled, and she wasn't taking chances. I found out everything, but no one ever came to get me out. Just left me for dead. Who cares about a damned scrim? I should have known.
She cut off when Mircha shook her.
Wait. You're saying you can do magic? You just need more power?
Yes. Something like that. Why?
He looked behind him up the little stretch of beach.
I have an idea.
Oh, God. Oh, God, oh, God, oh, God, oh, God.
Be silent, Mircha hissed.
I've never done anything. Oh, God.
And then the witch grabbed him, her eyes reflecting the lightning above them.
I'm going to be sick, she told him calmly.
And then she was, all over him. Mircha didn't care. He was already waist-deep in water, with waves crashing into him on the regular, washing away worse things than that, much worse. He held on to the little boat full of fish, and tried to keep the waves from slamming the damn thing into his half-healed legs, something he couldn't very well prevent, and hold on to the bricolet, the wooden pillars used for docking, at the same time. He and the witch were down a little way from the bridge, near where the vampires had been doused earlier. The side of the canal was built up here to make a decent pier, enough to hide them from eyes on the quayside if they didn't look down. And they wouldn't, not with what they were about to see. That was the hope, anyway, Mircha thought, fighting with the boat. It was an old hulk of a thing, a repurposed gondola, with its once shiny paint now mostly gone, and the wood beneath cracked and splitting, which was less of a problem than whether it would stay afloat.
They're coming.
He felt Dorina rejoin him, after briefly flitting about the nearby streets. Mircha was surprised it had taken them this long. The first five vampires had been nobodies, just hunting in local taverns and rousted out by the urgency of the Praetor's command. But her real troops were out now, and augmented by whomever they could press into service. There must be literally thousands of vampires on the streets, looking for them. And thanks to Dorina's whispers in the leader's ears, most of them were now coming this way.
How long? He asked her mentally.
Now.
Damn.
He grabbed the witch, who had been hugging a bricola to stay upright.
Do it.
She swallowed and looked at the boat, which had a mage and a vampire in it. Or to be more precise, half of each, two of the bodies from the fight at the now-vanished portal, wedged in and weighted down by piles of fish and nets to look like they were sitting up. One wore Mircha's face, the other her own. And either she was low on power, or she had overestimated her gift, because Mircha's doppelganger had one eye higher than the other and a terrifying grin on his face, while hers? Well, that would cure a man from going to brothels, he thought wildly. But perhaps it would be good enough from a distance.
I'm going to let the boat go, and then you do it, all right?
He repeated the plan because she wasn't looking all right.
I hope this works, she told him rapidly. I haven't done this much, or any. I mean, when I was younger, before they realized, I had the usual training, but I don't actually use. I mean, I never...
Mircha fought an urge to shake her.
It's all right. Just try to concentrate.
Yes.
She swallowed again.
When did you want me to...
Now.
Now?
Mircha's head jerked up because all of a sudden he could feel them. And by God, it was an ocean of vampire power surging their way.
irresistible, unstoppable, overwhelming. They were both going to die.
Yes, now, 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 now.
All right.
Now!
Stop yelling at me.
Now! Then launch the damn boat.
He didn't have to launch it so much as let the sea take it. He shoved it, nonetheless, as hard as he could, out into the swollen canal, which grabbed it like a child with a new toy. Mircea grabbed her, jerking the woman back among the bricolés, and slamming them both up against the canal, where the raging sea had carved a shallow channel into the side. He couldn't see the vampires assembling somewhere above them, could barely even see the boat through the water that kept hitting him in the face and the mountain-like waves, couldn't see anything. But someone else could.
There, in the boat. They're getting away.
He had a brief moment to hear the shout taken up by what sounded like an army, and then swords being dropped and boots being shed as the praetor's guards prepared to jump in after them. And yet still the witch did nothing, and neither could Mircea for fear of being overheard.
Wait,
she mouthed as he glared.
Wait,
as he shook her.
Wait, a pox take you.
And then a lightning bolt flashed, blindingly bright, and thunder boomed, so close and so loud that Mircea almost jumped out of his skin. And finally, finally, the witch threw out a hand, while everyone cowered in fear and the elements roared, and the little boat, storm-tossed and tempest-rocked, went up like a powder keg had gone off. Make that 100 powder kegs, Mircea thought, pushing the woman the rest of the way into the water, and shielding her as best he could as explosion after explosion tore through the night. They displaced the waves in a huge trough around what had been the boat. They sent what looked like burning orange fireworks into the formerly darkened night. They lit up the entire expanse of waterfront, including the witch's amazed face, resurfacing with a gasp because she hadn't expected that either. So that's what half a skeleton's worth of vampire bone gets you, Mircea thought, as the praetor's men shouted and the winds blew and what was left of the little craft sank beneath the waves to be carried away by the tide. Chapter 51. I slept for over a day, and for a wonder, nobody bothered me this time. Well, almost nobody. I blink my crusty eyes open to find another pair staring back at me. They were blue, a lovely, almost violet shade that human eyes never achieve without help, and huge, like those of an anime character come to life, and startled, because I guess they hadn't expected to be suddenly looking into mine either. A small creature let out a bleat and stumbled away into the middle of my bedroom floor, because somebody had brought me to Claire's. He hunched down with arms over his head, like he thought I was about to strike him, and then just stayed there, shaking in fear. I didn't move. The shaking increased for a moment, and the arms tightened. But when nothing happened, they loosened enough for one large purple eye to peer out from underneath. It flicked toward the door, which was halfway open, but the owner didn't budge. I didn't either, because I'd recognized my guest and wasn't particularly worried about being attacked by a half-dead troll kid. Not that he was looking half-dead now. I hadn't expected Olga's rescue to be on his feet any time soon, even in an obviously shaky sort of way, much less to be exploring the upper floors of the house. But trolls are damned hardy, more so than me. I felt stiff and starved and badly in need of a drink, but I didn't want to freak out the kid. So I just stayed there, unmoving, until he slowly, slowly, slowly stretched into a more or less standing position. He had dark brown hair, thick and shaggy, and completely unlike the twins' baby fine variety. He also wasn't the usual gray-green, but more of a gray-teal, with bluish undertones to the skin. He had the small mouth and round face of a child, and even a somewhat smallish nose, which for trolls is more telling, to the point that I wondered how young he actually was. And then there were those eyes,
framed by long, thick, dark lashes. He was freaking adorable. But he was also still hunched over somewhat, despite the impression I had